And welcome to Folk Tales. I'm Terry Bennett, and in the studio, although not actually in the studio, we're pre-recording this in Oborne, is Nick Hunt, who's the Managing Director of Hunt Accountants. Hello, Nick.
Hello, good afternoon. Well, morning or whatever
when
it's meant to be.
It, yeah. It's afternoon when we're recording it. Nick, you are Managing Director of Hunt Accountants. It's a business you set up.
Yeah.
Just tell us very briefly what Hunt Accountants is now all about.
Okay, well, we're a firm of accountants, been around for 20 years, celebrated that this year. We represent sort of local businesses, right from the sort of very small through to turning over sort of 7-8 million. We're heavily involved in technology, and we use it imaginatively and where we think there's a purpose to use it to try and connect with the clients on a more day-to-day basis. So with the changes that technology's been in through AI systems and changes coming through, we're trying to be at the front end of that and say that where there is a technological solution that can make business owners' lives easier, then we try to work with the clients to get those put in place.
Okay. And the business has been around for 20 years?
Yeah.
And you set it up?
Yeah. Yeah, many years. Yeah, does seem like a long, long time ago now. Not as an accountancy firm right at the beginning. I started a firm selling software solutions and sort of implementing them for people, showing them how it works. And then people sort of got the picture that I was an accountant. And so the practice was sort of born very, very slowly.
You're based at that rather quirky building that many people will have driven past, but maybe not so many have been to. And it's the old pumping station at Oborne. Quite an interesting place it is, isn't it?
It is, yeah. We've been here for 5 years. We were in the centre of town in it's called the Music House, opposite the Green Restaurant. We were there for 12 years. I've been in here for 5. I always loved the building. I've been around Sherborne all my life, and I always loved the building and thought it'd make a great office. The timing came together, so we're here.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll do what we normally do, have a wander through your life. Before we do that, let's take your first track. It's Kings of Leon.
Yes.
Favourite.
Yeah, it is. Well, I like the band. They're a fairly modern band, sort of playing now, but I like the influences of where they've come from, and I like a lot of the other music I like has sort of led to bands like these people being around. So the Closer track is just a good example of what they do. Yeah,
okay,
I do
it's
like
Kings
them.
Of Leon and Closer.
Thank you.
as the Kings of Leon and Closer, as chosen by my guest today, Nick Hunt of Hunt's Accountants. So, Nick, we know a little bit about the business as it now stands, but let's go back and talk about how it all began for you. Are you local?
Yeah, born in Sherborne at the Yetman Hospital, yeah, and grew up in Bradford Abbas.
Okay.
Just up the road.
Yeah. And early childhood days, was it just you or you got some...
No, I've got two brothers and a sister. So, yeah, it was always lively in the Hunt household in Bradford Abbas growing up. Went to the primary school in St Mary's in Bradford Abbas. And yeah, what? Very good.
Mum and dad?
Mum was a nurse all her sort of working life, and dad worked at, what isn't Westlands now, but it's keeps changing
Leonardo
names, but Leonardo, I think, now. But yeah, dad worked at Westlands all his life. Yeah.
So, Freddie's traditional family setting.
Very much. Yeah. Used
happy,
to think of
days.
It as like the Waltons. Yeah. It was, it was very happy. Yeah. I was the middle. So I've got an older brother and a younger brother, but it was always noisy in the Hunt house. Lots of fun.
Yeah. And the school over there has got a very good reputation now. Was it a good school to attend?
Yeah, it was. It was, in fact, funnily enough, we had my parents' 50th wedding anniversary in the village hall next to the school a couple of weeks ago. And me and my brothers were sort of wandering around the old school and reminiscing about what used to go on, you know. Yes, yeah, a lovely school. It's a lovely village. It was lovely when I was a child and living there, and I understand it still is now. I think it's a good place.
And early interest in school? Were you sporty? Were you academic?
I was. I think teachers would probably say I was a frustration. That classic thing of he could if he applied himself a little bit more. That was a typical school report. And if my parents were listening, that's what they would say. I always loved sport, but I never really struggled at school. I just didn't. Wasn't necessarily always motivated as much as I should be, but there you go.
Has the love of sport stayed with you?
Yeah, still love sport.
Do you play it?
Yeah. Not anymore. I coach a school football team where my children go to school. I coach their school football team on a Friday after school. I love doing that. It's great fun. So yeah, no, still love sport.
All right. So after a few years at Bradford Abbas, St Mary's Primary School, you graduated to the metropolis of Sherborne, presumably.
Yeah. Well, it was called St Oldham's back in the day. It's now known as the Griffin. And I don't think it was anything to do with my time at the school, but they knocked it all down pretty soon after I left. There was two grammar schools, Foster's and Digby's and St Oldham's. And then they amalgamated into one and it became the Griffin. But I don't think it was anything to do with me that they knocked it down. Not that I've heard.
There may have been bigger reasons.
Yeah.
All right, so you went to St Aldham's.
Yep.
And same sort of thing. Academically, you were okay. Sporting was really the...
Yeah, I like my sport. And school, I think schools have changed a lot. I don't think when I look around my... eldest is going to senior school in September, and I think education generally has got a lot better. I never really engaged that well. I mean, I did okay at school and I got, you know, decent results and what I needed and things, but I was never that studious, should we say.
And early days, any thoughts of career at that point?
I've always been fascinated by business. I've been fascinated by trying to come up with ideas of what makes a product sell. Or a service, and yeah, just trying to be innovative and try to look at, well, why would that person spend that money with you? If they were buying a product, if they were buying a service, why would they do that? And the fact that you can get to be very creative in business, and you have to be creative. And so that did fascinate me. Even when I was a small child, I started a car cleaning business. So Saturdays, I could make more money in a Saturday morning than the paper boys were making getting up every day, you know, throughout the week. So I used to think I was being clever, you know. So business has always fascinated me, and it still does.
So there was always going to be some business bias to what you ended up doing.
Yeah.
But that could have taken many, many different shapes, couldn't it?
Yeah.
So as school progressed, and you did presumably GCSEs or whatever it was then, how did that then take you?
Well, I had an uncle who was a partner of a big accountancy firm based in Swindon. And so I used to like talking to him because he would talk to me about businesses and clients, and I was always fascinated by that world. And so it just seemed to me quite logical that if you wanted to get into business of some form, accountancy was a very good place to start because it's what's measuring the business's success. So to me, it seemed like a good way to get started. And so that's what I did.
We'll sort of come to how that then developed.
Yeah.
But let's take your second track. This is Neil Young.
Yes. Yeah.
And
Southern Man.
Yeah.
Well, you could have. Neil Young, a phenomenal artist, but a lot of his songs are 9-10 minutes, which you probably wouldn't have wanted. So, yeah, Southern Man. My wife's a massive fan of Neil Young, and I always quite liked him, but I've kind of got more into his stuff since we've been married. So, yeah, really like that.
All
track.
Right, let's have the track. Neil Young and Southern Man. That's Neil Young and Southern Man, as chosen by Nick Hunt, who's the managing director of Hunt's Accountants. And Nick, we reached the stage where you're leaving school and looking at career choices, and you decided that accountancy was going to be the direction you wanted to go. Mm-hmm. How did you actually make all that happen?
Well, at the time, it was the YTS scheme. There were various options. I could have gone to college and sort of done A-levels or BTECs or whatever were around at the time. But I wanted to get into work. I liked the idea of just getting straight into work at 16. And so I took a YTS with a firm in Yeovil called Hunt Wagstaff. And yeah, that was the start.
And the Hunt element of that, is that?
No relation. No, neither is the Hunt's Frozen Foods, which would be... You know, I wouldn't have maybe have had to have worked as hard if if I had been related, but no, just absolute coincidence.
A lot of people will remember YTS. It sort of was a bit derided at the time, wasn't it? But
yeah.
Was it a good scheme?
I mean, we do a lot of apprenticeships at Hunts now, and we got an award, I think, last year, I think it was, a regional award from the National Apprenticeship. We've put lots of people through the apprenticeship scheme. I don't think it's changed... I mean, in essence, I don't think it's changed much. The funding's provided by the government. You get a day a week to go to college, and then you're expected to work for the other four. It's quite an eye-opener when you're 16 to go from school into a work environment. But no, I don't think it's changed dramatically.
So that's what you ended up doing. You were with Hunt Wagstaff, but a day a week you were at Yeovil College.
Yeah.
What sort of things do you do as a 16-year-old trainee?
Not what you do anymore. This is back in the day where accountants were probably... There was a sea of people with adding machines, you know, sort of manually adding up. And you do things like bank reconciliations and stuff that if I asked my apprentices to do now, they'd sort of look at me sideways and think I'd gone mad. But, yeah, it was all very much manual and attention to detail. And I remember... We were not allowed a calculator for the first 3 months of working there. Everything had to be done. You had to add up everything. Mental arithmetic was king. Mm. And if you were caught cheating, if you were trying to do something and it didn't add up and you thought you could cheat your way through, they'd make you add up a section of the phone book. And I tell my apprentices this now and they think I'm making it up, but it's absolutely true because I saw, it never happened to me, but I did see one of the YTS candidates was made to add up a section of the phone book because he cheated on what he was doing. But things have changed.
Somebody had to add it up alongside him to make sure he was right. Then,
well, they would. I think he thought that no one would bother, and I thought, no, I think they probably would. And the job's changed dramatically. But then any job in 20 years has changed. Yeah, it's changed a lot, or more than 20 years.
Well, apart from anything else, there's no phone book anymore.
No, there's. Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah.
All right, so you were working for Hunt Wagstaff, and again, early days in accountancy. Was that what you expected it to be? Was it good?
Yeah, it was. It was quite a decent-sized firm. There was about 50, 60 people. So, yeah, it was. I mean, I had no idea of... I'm trying to remember, but at kind of 16, you don't really know what you're doing. And I try and say that to the apprentices now. You know, you don't know whether accountancy is for you. You might think it is. You may find in the first year that it's not. But at the time, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed going to college. Like I say, it was quite an eye-opener. But then every job is.
Mm. Lots of number crunching.
There was. Mm. A lot more than there is now.
And developing a work ethic and accuracy, which obviously you need in
accountancy. Yeah, but I quite liked, I remember, well, I guess it's not that surprising, but the very small amount of technology that was about at the time, I really embraced that. And so I remember I did quite a lot of work with one of the partners, which for someone on a YTS scheme was, you know, unusual that the partner would ask, you know, me to go and help him work on this because we were trying to develop cleverer ways of doing things. So yeah, I used to like that, to have somebody that would sort of say, well, I think you might be onto something, Nick, come and have a look at this with me. I did enjoy that, just the challenge. Yeah.
So how long did that last?
So I did my training pretty much with Hunt Wagstaff. I moved on to one other firm in Gillingham briefly, a smaller firm. So yeah.
And the Yeovil College side of it eventually got you an accounting qualification?
Yeah, I've AAT qualified when I finished at Yeovil College.
Was that like a three-year course?
Three-year course. Yeah. And then on to the ACCA stuff.
Yes. And then you moved to a job in Gillingham, but you decided somewhere along the line that you were going to go off around.
Well, I think the downside of trying to make decisions at 16 is you don't really know. And now that I'm a dad, you get a, you know, you can see the world a bit differently, I suppose. So in my early 20s, I was sort of thinking, well, I don't think accountancy's for me anymore, and it wasn't what I wanted to do. And so I decided that all I'd ever done is gone to school and then I'd gone to work, and I'd never really seen much of the world, and I didn't really know what was out there, and had that kind of wobble, I guess, that lots of people have at that age. And actually probably would say it was the making of me that I then just sort of put a backpack on and set off and went travelling and loved it. Still look back at it now and think it was one of the best things I ever did.
Great adventure.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
What did you do? Did you just buy a ticket?
In the day it was an interrailing. So you could buy an interrailing ticket. Yeah, so I just got on a ferry and set off. And none of my friends at the time were able to get out of jobs or take time off. And we kept talking about doing it. And it didn't happen. And so in the end, I just said, well, I'm just going to go on my own. And I actually think in lots of ways, doing it by yourself was the right thing to do. Forces you into the people you meet as you know, I never actually traveled alone from the time I left. You'd meet people from all over the world. And you travel for a few days if you're going in the same direction as somebody from Australia or America or wherever it was, and then go off in different directions. But I absolutely loved it, yeah.
Where did it take you?
All around Europe, down through France, Italy, Greece, Turkey, and then back up through Germany, Belgium, back around.
So mainly Europe.
Very good. Yeah. Yeah, it was all in Europe, didn't have the budget to get further than Europe at the time.
And how long did that take then?
In total, probably about 6 weeks, I guess.
So quite an adventure.
At the time, yeah. At my age, and this was all pre kind of social media and mobile phones, so you were gone in terms of no one knew where you were, what you were up to. I tried to report in occasionally, keep my parents from sort of getting too concerned. But yeah, no, I loved it. It's great fun. And then I sort of came back briefly, and then I went again, got a job on a Greek island. I was meant to be there for 6 months.
You got a job on a Greek island?
I did, yeah. Really? This is my...
Not as an accountant, though.
No. I got a job I was a cocktail barman. Right. I think I thought I had ideas of that film, the Tom Cruise film with cocktail. And I was meant to be there for 6 months. I did three and then decided I'd had enough and it was time to come home, really. And I actually read the book. I read Richard Branson's autobiography when I was out there, and it was sort of doing that that made me think, look, it's time to go. I know what I want to do. I want to start my own business. That's what I want to do. That's when I came home.
So would you say that the experience of taking that time out and spending that time by yourself and all the changes in culture really helped to shape that idea?
One of the things that it teaches you is the fact that when you arrive in a European city and you've arrived on a train and it's midnight and you don't know where you're going to sleep, and there are times where you think, what am I going to do? And you want to press an escape button, but there isn't one there. And every time up until then in your life, there is. There's always somebody there to pick you up or help you out. So throwing yourself in at the deep end and then realizing that you can actually do it, you're going to be perfectly fine, I think probably sparked off that idea that actually I can do anything I want to if I have a go at it, and I accept it might not work, but at least I've had a go. I think it probably did spark that off. Yeah, definitely.
Right. Well, you did eventually come back and presumably back to Bradford Abbas, was it?
To Bradford Abbas. Mum and Dad had agreed to take me back in.
You then had to find some form of employment. You said you wanted to start your own business. Did that happen straight away?
No. What I did was I sort of took bar work. So I was working in the evenings behind a bar in a village pub out Hardington Mandeville way. And I think at the time I took a couple of part-time jobs doing bookkeeping work for firms in the area. And at the same time, I tried to start this business selling software. Sage were a big player in the market at the time. Computers were becoming more and more affordable. So businesses were moving from sort of manual to computerized records, and I could see there was an opportunity there. So I started doing that. So it was hard work. It was a case of sort of putting the hours in throughout the day and then going and doing a shift in the pub in the evening to get the money together to survive, I suppose, and give me something to live on. But it took a long time. It's hard work.
Pretty typical business startup scenario then.
Pretty much.
Lots and lots of hours to get it all off the ground.
Yeah. When the staff look at me now, and if I slope out early, and they're thinking, why is he, how's he getting away? I always think, but I've done my time.
All right, well, let's break again, shall we, and take your next track, which is by The Who.
Yep.
Favourite band?
Yeah, I really like The Who. Kind of from when I was a child, I liked The Who. And they've influenced so many bands, and bands that I like now are still influenced by them. And I could have picked any number of tracks by them, but Baba O'Reilly is, yeah, it's a phenomenal tune. Yeah, very good.
All right, Baba O'Reilly by The Who. Who then? Baba O'Reilly, as chosen by Nick Hunt, my guest today on Folk Tales. Nick, you found yourself back in Bradford Abbas, and
yep,
you started up selling software, accounting software,
yep,
and working in a bar in the evenings,
yep,
to keep the funds rolling in.
Yeah.
How did that develop into Hunt's Accountants?
Well, it kind of, as I sort of said, you were never going to start an accountancy firm, and who would want to be client number one? So I thought I'll start a firm selling the software. And from that, those customers would sort of say, well, how do we implement the system, Nick? And so I'd train them and I'd show them how to use it. And then they'd sort of say, well, how do we get stuff out of it? So how do we generate quarterly accounts? How do we get our management reports together? How do we do all of these things? So I'd start working with them. And then it was more the sort of customers saying, well, hang on a minute, so you know about all this stuff? And you'd say, well, yeah, I'm an accountant. That's what I trained to do. And so slowly the client list sort of grew from people saying, oh right, well, if you're, well, you've put the system in, so why can't you be our accountant? And you say, well, okay. And that's kind of how it started, really. But it's, yeah, it was hard work. I can remember having a load of sort of flyers printed and driving around the trading estates in Yeovil. Yeah, and like I say, I've always been fascinated by business. So when clients come in now, even though I'm sort of 45, I still know what it takes to make a business, to get a business off the ground, the commitment, the effort that you have to put in. And that basic thing of accepting that there's no point in putting up an excuse as to why something hasn't worked. It either worked or it didn't work. And it's as black and white as that. And I think those sort of things are good experience, because I don't think I've ever lost that. I still feel I'm pretty much the same chap that walked around the Australian estates all those years ago and driven and committed. And I think that's what you have to be.
Nevertheless, you're still quite young. You're sort of mid-20s at this point, and you've suddenly got people who may be quite experienced business people seeking your advice on things. Yep. Was that a comfortable experience?
Funnily enough, I was having this conversation with one of my team a few days ago, who's in their, they're in their late 20s, and I said, as you get older, the work you and the not at work you tend to come back together a bit, because when you're in your mid-40s, like I am now, I can just be more myself in a client meeting because you've got the reputation behind you, and people kind of look at you and think, well, I'm older than some of my clients now. So you almost, you create the respect because of your age and the fact you've been around for so long. When you're 25, yeah, it's tough, because people are looking at you thinking, well, what do you know? So you have to be very professional. You have to think about how you present yourself and about how to get the point across to a client much, much more than probably you do as you get older. Because it was a challenge. You kind of were very much judged on your results. So if they'd ask your advice on something, there's that thing of you have to deliver. So if the advice didn't work, well, you weren't going to last very long. But that's how it is.
But you still managed to gain a client base.
Yep.
Was that, looking back on that, was it reasonably straightforward?
No. Okay. No, very hard. I would say the first 50 clients are the hardest thing you ever do. And now we organically will grow 50, 60 new clients a year if we didn't do anything, just on recommendation. Mm-hmm. But the first 50, yeah, very, very hard. Yeah, it took a very long time and, yeah, huge amount of effort to do that.
And I imagine in those days, as it would be these days, service is everything. You know, why come to you rather than the firm of accountants down the road who may have much more experience?
Yeah. We did this thing, and I try and coach the staff in this way now, in that the client doesn't really know whether the advice you're giving is right or wrong. So you've got to be able to communicate. You might know the answer to the question. You might be able to deal with the issue that the client's got is putting to you, but you've got to present it in a way that they have confidence in you and that they trust you and they trust your judgment. And so trying to learn those skills of how you do that is something that we in the firm now are trying to coach the younger ones. It's not necessarily knowing the answer. That's a part of it. A lot of it is about how you communicate, how you connect. And I've always been able to connect very well with business owners. I can see when they're not getting it, or they don't understand, or they just, Nick, that doesn't make any sense to me. And then you sort of go again and say, right, okay, let's look at it this way. And so I think, I would hope, and I think the clients do generally say, the reason they like working with us is we're quite good at the communication side. We're good at not intimidating clients in meetings, of making sure they understand the process.
Back to the old principle of people buy people.
Yeah, very much.
And that's what marks you out against the next accountant down the road.
I think our approach to, our business approach to it, I always say in the firm that the only judges we've got are the clients. If the business community says Hunt's get it right as a firm, then we've done the job very, very well. The professional side of it, being well regarded by professional bodies and fellow peers, is important. I'm not saying it isn't, but the biggest judge are the business community. If the business community say Hunt's get it right, then we're getting it right. And because we've always been focused on that and always looked at it from the client's point of view, what does the client want? What does the client value? That's where I think we've done okay, really.
Okay, back to the development of the business. You say that gaining your first 50 clients was the really uphill task, but once you got past that point, you know, we're talking 1998 here, aren't we, when you started. At what point did you think, this is a business, it's going to work?
It probably took 3 or 4 years, I would have thought, before I thought I had anything that could be sustained and grown. And then, it did. It probably took that long, I would
have
thought.
And presumably the early days, you were just working more or less from home, were you? Did you?
No, I was awful at working from home. I couldn't. I work from home on a Friday now, so I'm in the office 4 days a week, and then I work at home 1 day a week. And I couldn't do more than 1 day now. I have to come to the office. It's the throwing of the switch that says I'm at work. And so I rented space in other offices. I'd sort of go around and say to people, have you got a room? So I even, at one point, had an office in another firm of accountants. So, or financial advisors. I had a room in a financial advisors in Yeovil, briefly. So, I tried to find myself a place to work, because I knew working from home wasn't for me.
How has the business developed from there then? Because you've now got 15 staff. It's come a long way, hasn't it?
Steadily. I think I've always doing my own thing, I suppose, and trying to create my own firm and always wanting to go my own way. There was always, not necessarily motivated by money or those sort of things, it was more the ability to be able to control my own life. So I wanted to be able to say how many hours I work and try and strike that kind of work-life balance. And so now that I've got the children, I don't put in anywhere near the hours that I used to do. And so the progression of the firm, the growth of the firm, has been trying to always strike that balance between, if I was totally single-minded and the firm was all that I was about, then I could have grown it a lot quicker. I could have grown it. It could be a lot bigger than it is today. But it was never like that for me. It was always a case of, I wanted to do my own thing. I wanted to create a sense of choice, but I wanted to do it alongside living with my wife and now the kids. So, it's about balance.
At what point did you take on your first member of staff?
Ooh, that's a question. I had my cousin, actually, was my first admin. So I had an admin assistant first, Rachel, and so it wouldn't have been long. I think probably, a year or so after I started. Because you very quickly realise, I've only got X number of hours in the day. My time's better spent going to try to talk to new clients and get things moving. So,
And did you find, once the business had become established, it gained its own inertia, as you say, with recommendations, and you could then back off the marketing side of it?
I know now, even though, we're a fairly well-established firm now, but we still spend time and effort and money on marketing and trying to attract new clients to the firm. But I've always known that it doesn't really matter how much of that you do, 80%+ of all new clients will come via recommendation. And so the best way to get the client list to grow is to make sure you take very good care of the ones you've got. And I can still do it now. I can still say to the team in the office, right, that client, and that client have all come because we did that fantastic piece of work for that client. And we were talking about that in the last 2-3 months, where somebody said, why have we got a little cluster of new clients in this part of the world? And I said, because I did that piece of work for that person, and they know them, and da-da-da-da-da-da, and on it goes. And so, but it certainly gets easier. It's a bit like pushing a snowball. It just kind of gains its own momentum after a while.
We'll come back and talk just a bit more about Hunts as it currently is now, but let's take your fourth track, which is The Police and Every Breath You Take.
Yeah, but I didn't want to put this one forward, and I wrote down Message in a Box, because everybody likes Every Breath You Take. I loved The Police when I was a child, and I can still remember nagging my dad to pick me up some TDK tapes so that I could record this track off the radio. Am I meant to have done that back in the day? Probably not. But it was so that I could record this, and I played this thing over and over and over and over again. And even now, like probably lots of people, the minute you hear the opening bars of that track, it hits you. So they had a phenomenal catalogue of music. But despite the fact I wasn't going to say it, that is another one.
Yeah. All right. The Police, Every Breath You Take. We'll be right back. Okay, that's The Police and Every Breath You Take, and I'm chatting today on Folktales with Nick Hunt of Hunt's Accountants. And Nick, we've got pretty much up to date, haven't we? We're sat here in your rather splendid building, air-conditioned today as well.
Yeah.
And Hunt's Accountants is now a thriving business.
Yeah, it is. I'm very proud of it. I still enjoy it, still get a buzz from doing it. And a lot of that is about the team. We always try and have apprentices in the building, and we're just about to take another one on now. And I like watching the development of people and being part of that. That's good to do. Love working with the clients. The diversity in a week is quite staggering.
Yeah, tell me about the clients. I'm imagining it's a fairly diverse bunch.
Well, like anybody in life, they're such a good diverse collection of personalities, different businesses, but it's the personalities as well. So if you look at your diary and you think, I've got 3-4 meetings today to do, they're always fascinating. Over a day, just the people and where they are. Some are in great situations because their businesses are thriving. Some are in tough situations, and you have to try and work with them as well and pick them up and give them a bit of a push when needed. But yeah, they it's the people really that make it. For me, I think it's, and there's always challenges. You know, there's the technology changes in the profession are huge at the moment, and lots of accountants are very fearful of it. I think business is always, it's always about adapting. It's always about accepting the change in environment. Nobody wants to be the next Blockbuster. You accept the change, you see, try and understand the world that you're in, and then you have to try and find your angle. You have to try and find, well, how do you make that work for you as a business? The creative part of trying to find a solution and trying to work with change still fascinates me. I still love doing that.
You spoke there about the changes in technology. Mm. I imagine that in common with many other businesses, there's plenty of providers out there on the internet that will produce you a set of accounts if you just give them a whole lot of numbers.
Yeah.
But that's as far as it goes.
Yeah.
And the added value they get from you is...
Yeah, it's a thing I got asked to do a talk at a presentation to a room full of new startups recently. And you're always going to get one that sort of says this, and you've just got to accept it. And they're not necessarily wrong, but, well, they are wrong. That sort of says, well, look, if I've got these cloud solutions that can do everything for me and I can generate a profit and loss and I can do all these things, why would I need you? Why do I need any accountant? I don't need you. And the answer I gave to that person was, well, look, as far as I'm aware, it still takes 7 years to qualify as an accountant. They haven't simplified the tax legislation. They haven't simplified the compliance that businesses have to adhere to. The technology change is about how we capture data. It's not about the job, it's about how we capture data. What I was trying to explain to this person was, I said, look, you know, if I look at it now and think, well, I'm on client number 1280, whatever it is, in my time of being in practice, on top of all the people I've got in my team, what's the chance that you're going to come up against a situation that I haven't seen before? So having somebody like Hunt's, and there are lots of other very good firms around, having an accountant in place benefits you from, even if you sort of ignored the obvious things, the non-obvious things, the things like, well, yeah, but could you not pick the phone up to them and say, I'm having a problem with this. What do you think I should do about this? What do you think I should do about that? And the chances are your accountant's probably already seen it, has seen it with another business, has seen that not work, has seen that work, will be able to give you that guidance. And so technology change doesn't intimidate me. I think it's changing what we do. And I don't think for a bad thing. I think what it's enabling us to do is be much more connected to our client, much more a part of what they do on a day-by-day basis, and almost puts you in that place where you can become that financial director in situ that they can't afford because they're not a big enough business, because you're at the end of a Skype call or the end of a phone or the end of an email, but you're connected to what they're doing 24/7. So I can't see how we can't benefit from it.
What's the vision for Hunt's going forward then?
More of the same, I think. I've got the building where we are now. We've planned there could be 25 of us here. And I think, well, who knows? I'm still aiming to do that, to fill the firm up with 20, you know, so that there's 25 of us here. And I may find that that's enough for me. And I'll have done it for a long time. And that's as far as I want to take it. I don't sort of sit here today with ambitions of multiple offices and partners, and it's not really for me, I don't think. But you know, you never know.
Hunt's Accountants (Tokyo Limited).
Yeah, no, that's not. Don't think that'll happen. I think we're
all right. Yeah, we're coming towards the end of our time. But what does Nick do to relax outside work?
Well, I've got my girls, Lily and Imogen, who are 11 and 9, and obviously my wife Annabelle. So we spend a lot of time together, the four of us. We live down between Bridport and Lyme Regis because we love the sea. So we've got a little boat that we like to muck about in and go fishing and tow the kids and in a Ringo and generally get them used to being in the sea. I love being in the sea. Bit of surfing, we go surfing quite a bit. We've always had a camper van, so we do lots of trips. We're off again soon for a trip over to France. And so, yeah, we like just going and getting lost, really, and having an adventure.
Nick, it's been great talking to you. Thank you for the interview. We'll play out with your final track, which is Pearl Jam and Nothing Man.
Again, fantastic band, huge catalogue of great music. It's not a very cheery song, as the title suggests, but it's a very, very good tune.
Nick, we wish you well. We wish the business well.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thanks for chatting to us today.
Thank you. It's cold.